All right, so as we are continuing in Jeremiah, we're going to be in chapter 51. We had covered 30 verses the last time we were together. So we're going to be picking up at 31 and 32. And, you know, what we see is, you know, God will speak of judgment, 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 and then he'll just interject some little nugget of hope and compassion and blessing. And those are the things you got to grab onto, you know. So as we continue today, we're going to start in verses 31 and 32 of Jeremiah 51. And believe it or not, we're going to try to complete this chapter, if it's at all possible. So we're going to move pretty quickly. All right. So 31 and 32, it says, "One post shall run to meet another, and one messenger to meet another, to show the king of Babylon that his city is taken at one end. And the passages are stopped, and the reeds they have burned with fire, and the men of war are affrighted." So what we're talking about here are the posts. Are those people, they're posted on the walls. Now, I read that the wall where the watchtowers are for the Babylonian city were 300 feet high. And that gave them, I mean, if you ever looked at a relief map of the city of Babylon, it's in a plain, so it's in a wide open area. And that would give you a really good vantage to see everything that was happening. So the posts are these watchmen that were set up on the wall. And it says that they were going to run to meet one another to show the king of Babylon that his city is being taken. So what happened, you know, we talked about how wide the walls of the city were. And the truth of the matter is that the city walls were actually double walls. So there was the outside wall, and then there was an inner wall, and it encompassed the entire city. And I believe, I'll save it. I know I got it written down, but I believe it's like 60 miles of wall that went around the city. So you can imagine that when they see an enemy approaching, that the post would run to go and inform somebody that there was trouble, and then that person would then run and go and tell somebody, because one guy was not going to run 60 miles to go to where he had to go. And the Lord makes it real clear that that it was taken at one end. So the Medo-Persians came in at one end of the city. So it wasn't like they encompassed the entire city and came in on all sides. So whoever the post was on that side of the city had to inform everybody that it was coming. And then that messenger went to the next messenger, went to the next messenger, and spread it throughout. See, they didn't have cell phones at that time. So they had to do everything by word of mouth and running. And then it says that all the passages are stopped, and the reeds they have burned with fire, and the men of war are frighted. So what happened was Cyrus, well, there are a lot of things that were going on here. And I'll apologize in advance if I repeat myself, because sometimes when God does these things, he reiterates certain judgments that are happening. But we said Babylon it was a flourishing city. And I mean flourishing from the standpoint of a lot of greenery. So there was lots of orchards, lots of farm, lots of trees that were growing, olives and whatever, right? But the land had a lot of, like the Euphrates River came through the city, but there were a lot of tributaries that came off of it and fed all of these lush landscapes around the city. But what happened was God, who we know is in control of the weather, brought a drought. So what happened was a lot of these little tributaries began to dry up. So all the reeds that were on the sides of these tributaries and on the sides of the Euphrates, as the water receded and started to go down, these reeds started to die. And if you know what happens, you know, when you put a fire to a dead brush, it just goes, right? So what happened was Cyrus said, hey, this is our opportunity. The Euphrates River is lowered because of the drought. We can go into the city. So what they did was they set fire to the reeds, and that serves two purposes. Because if you remember, like with Gideon, when they broke the lamps so that the enemy could only see the lights, and then they screamed, right? They didn't know how many people were coming after them because it seemed like they were being attacked on all sides by a multitude, right? So what Cyrus does is he sets a fire, and then the fire creates smoke and flame and everything, and it hides the number of people that are coming after the city. Because as I said, you know, the city was in a flat land, and you could see everybody coming. So, but it also scares people because you got fire, right? I mean, nobody likes fire. So Cyrus does that so that he can disguise, you know, the number of people that are coming in. Plus, it gives cover to the guys that are now going under the wall. So the men of war of Babylon become fearful. And then, you know, it continues and it says in verse 33, "For thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, the daughter of Babylon is like a threshing floor. It is time to thresh her. Yet a little while, and the time of her harvest shall come." So we understand, you know, threshing happens at the time of harvest. And there's a time appointed by God when Babylon was going to be overrun, the city of Babylon. And this is the time of her harvest. So, you know, the reapers are going to come in, and they're going to cut down the Babylonian army, and they're going to thresh her like wheat. So they're going to be trodden down, I guess, is the only way I can put it. We talked about, you know, how they would separate the wheat from the chaff the last time we were together. But, you know, before you can do that, you got to beat the wheat so that it begins to separate it from the berry and the chaff, and then they would toss it into the air, and the wind would carry the chaff away, and then all you have left is the wheat berry. So he's equating it that way so that the Babylonians would be like the threshing floor of the wheat at the time of harvest. That's understandable. I mean, we've already discussed that in the past. Then verses 34 and 35, it says, "Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, hath devoured me. He hath crushed me. He hath made me an empty vessel. He hath swallowed me up like a dragon. He hath filled his belly with my delicates. He hath cast me out. The violence done to me and to my flesh be upon Babylon, shall the inhabitant of Zion say, and my blood upon the inhabitants of Chaldea, shall Jerusalem say." So, if you only read verse 34, you wouldn't know who they were talking about. But 35 gives us an understanding that it's the inhabitants of Zion who are speaking. And then the Lord personifies Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem, as if Jerusalem is also saying this as well. It's an interesting method of, I don't know. I can only say personification. It's a technique of writing. So, you know, when he says that, you know, he speaks of her devouring, crushing, emptying, swallowing, and, you know, casting out, done violence. So what's happening is this is just how God works. God's saying, remember, These are the things that Babylon did to my people and to my city. In case we forget. Because, you know, we can read, you know, the things that God says he's going to do to chastise them. But sometimes we don't think about, you know, what they did to require God to have to do this. And God is making it clear. And then verse 36, he says, therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will plead thy cause and take vengeance for thee, and I will dry up her sea and make her springs dry. So this is the Lord, you know, as if Jerusalem and the people of Jerusalem cried out to the Lord, and the Lord says, I'm going to do something about this. Now, we have to remember, as we've been going through Jeremiah, Babylon hasn't fallen yet. These are things God is prophesying through Jeremiah. And, you know, it's probably difficult for people to read after the fact. You know, like, we know historically it's already a done deal. But as we read it, we already know, oh, this happened. But, you know, to the people that Jeremiah was writing to, this is still in the future. It's something that is yet to come. So God says, you know, that he's going to dry up her sea and make her springs dry. And that's what we spoke about where I said he's going to bring a drought so that, you know, the waters begin to recede and those tributaries dry up. So those things that the city relied upon to bring in food and water are now going to become more scarce. And in the book of Zechariah, I am one of these prophets also to Judah. In chapter 1, verses 12 to 15, we have Zechariah's prophecy also. And it's interesting, you know, when the Lord tells people things, he doesn't confuse them. Well, that's interesting. I went to Zephaniah. So he repeats things so that they almost sound word for what somebody else was saying, right? So verses 12 to 15 of Zechariah chapter 1 says, then the angel of the Lord answered and said, O Lord of hosts. And remember, God called himself the Lord of hosts in our scripture here. How long wilt thou not have mercy on Jerusalem and on the cities of Judah, against which thou hast had indignation these 70 years? So we understand, you know, 70 years they were in captivity, right? So the angel is asking, you know, how long are you going to allow what your people have gone through to go through? And the Lord answered the angel that talked with me with good words and comfortable words. So the angel that communed with me said unto me, cry thou, saying, thus saith the Lord of hosts, I am jealous for Jerusalem and for Zion with a great jealousy, and I am very sore displeased with the heathen that are at ease. For I was but a little displeased, and they helped forward the affliction. So what God is saying is, he was, on a scale, God says, I was a little displeased with my people. So I brought up this nation to come and be the tool to chastise them. But they went so far out of the way, abundantly over what I had hoped, that he says, now I'm not pleased with them anymore. But not only did they crush his people and take everything, destroy the cities, but he says, now they're at ease. So they're sitting back like they're fat and happy. They're all happy that they've conquered Israel and Judah and made them part of their empire. Now they're taking it easy. And, you know, we're going to see that in a moment. So he says in verse 37, Babylon shall become heaps, a dwelling place for dragons, an astonishment and a hissing, without an inhabitant. And we talked about this last time that, you know, they were going to tear down the walls. They were going to tear down the structures, that the city was never going to be occupied again. And it hasn't been. And, you know, when God says it's not going to be a dwelling place for people, it's not a dwelling place for people. So it's just going to be a place that he says for dragons. And, you know, people can take that any way they want. But most people think that it's like serpents and scorpions. So, you know, the English language back in the day had very few words. So they used words to discuss a broad range of things. So we think of dragons like, you know, winged, fly, breathe fire, you know. But that's not necessarily what we're talking about here. Then in verse 38, he says, they shall roar together like lions. They shall yell as lions whelps. Now, this is a... It's one of those verses, if you just read the verse by itself, you're not sure who it's really talking about. And some people have said that it's the Persian army, the Medes and the Persians, when they came into the city and they overtook it in less than a day, and they're cheering because of their great victory. But that really doesn't make sense, because historically, when you read the account, it says they came in by night, and even before anybody knew what was going on, they had overrun the city. So there wasn't like this big, you know, to-do, hey, we did it, you know. So the other side of it is people think, and I believe this is true, that we're talking about the Babylonians. They're roaring like lions and lions whelps because they were having a party. They were having so much fun that they didn't even know that their city was being attacked. And everybody was drunk and involved in whatever sins that they were involved in. And there was a ruckus, right? So that seems to be borne out, because the next thing that we read is in verses 39 and 40, where it says, in their heat I will make their feasts, and I will make them drunken, that they may rejoice and sleep a perpetual sleep, and not wake, saith the Lord. I will bring them down like the lambs to the slaughter, like rams with he-goats. So we understand, you know, maybe most of you were here when we went through the book of Daniel. When we went through the book of Daniel, it talked about that night Belshazzar was having a big party. And if I remember correctly, I think it said he had 1,000 lords with him who were reveling in this party. And they were all getting drunk and having a good time. And Belshazzar says, you know, bring the chalices and the cups from the temple that was in Jerusalem, and we're going to drink out of that. So he put his wine and everything in that. And then the hand came up and started to write on the wall, right? And, you know, your time is up, right? Basically. And his knees began to knock and he began to shake. So it says that they were all drunk and they're going to sleep a perpetual sleep. Well, see, God makes it real clear. Sometimes when the Bible talks about sleep, if you just leave it sleep, then it's a death that's not permanent, right? So they shall all sleep until Christ returns, right? But this is a perpetual sleep. So this is a sleep like they're dead, they're not coming back. So this is clear. God's making it clear. He's going to bring them like lambs to the slaughter. So, you know, there's no, at this point, there's no big outcry. Lambs to the slaughter don't roar like a lion, right? So you know that that can't be talking about that kind of a situation. And in the book of Daniel, if you want, we can read it. Daniel chapter 5, verses 1 to 4. I think I pretty much covered it, but it says, Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords, and drank wine before 1,000. Belshazzar, whilst he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the gold and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines might drink therein. Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God, which was at Jerusalem, and the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines drank in them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver, of brass, of iron, of wood, and of stone. Well, if you want to get God angry, then you take those things that were consecrated unto the Lord, and you use them to honor false gods, right? So God's making it clear. We have a problem here, and this is what's going to happen. I think I want to make sure I didn't go too far. Oh, yeah, I did. Okay. So verses 41 to 44. It says, how is Shishak taken? And how is the praise of the whole earth surprised? How is Babylon become an astonishment among the nations? The sea is come up upon Babylon. She is covered with the multitude of the waves thereof. Her cities are a desolation, a dry land, and a wilderness, a land wherein no man dwelleth. Neither doth any son of man pass thereby. And I will punish Bel in Babylon, and I will bring forth out of his mouth that which he hath swallowed up. And the nations shall not flow together any more unto him. Yea, the wall of Babylon shall fall. So what we have, I'm going to kind of go a little backwards. When he talks about Bel, we talked about Bel was one of the gods of the Babylonians. So like Belshazzar took the name of the god to incorporate into his name. And he says, God says he's going to destroy them utterly so that, you know, no one's going to live there again, right? So, you know, that's been repeated. But he says, how is Shishak taken? And we looked at Shishak before. Shishak was just another name for Babylon. And it's really complicated. Maybe it wouldn't have been complicated for you folks, but it was complicated for me because there's this mathematical code that was used where you take the letters that are in the word that you're working with and you substitute them numerically with other letters, and that's how you get the Shishak, but it's Babylon. And they give the formula. It has a name. I didn't write it down, but it was just beyond me to figure out. But so you can, the idea is that it was just another name for Babylon, but it meant something to the Jews because they were familiar with the way that they transposed those letters. I don't know why God did that. I don't know why it was translated that way. But I'm sure when we get to heaven, the Lord will make it clear to us. But, you know, he says that the sea is going to come upon Babylon, and she's covered with the multitude of the waves. Now, sometimes when we talk about the sea, it's talking about a mass of people. And that's very common in the book of Revelation. And they're talking about the armies that are going to be coming against Babylon. They're going to come like a sea, a multitude of people, so that they'll come in waves and they're going to just come after her. And, oh, I forgot. The Shishak was something that we saw also earlier in the book of Jeremiah chapter 25. And I'll just tell you, it's in verses 26 and 27. But at that time, I didn't talk about the way that they coded it and everything, but a cipher. Yes, exactly. But like I said, I'm not sure why God chose to do that here, but he's speaking about the utter destruction of that city. All right. Then in verses 45 and 46, he says, my people, go ye out of the midst of her and deliver ye every man his soul from the fierce anger of the Lord. And lest your heart faint, and ye fear for the rumor that shall be heard in the land, a rumor shall both come, 1 year, and after that in another year shall come a rumor, and violence in the land, ruler against ruler. So what's going to happen? Just how God works all the time. When the judgment is coming, God sends a warning. And God says there's going to be a rumor. Now, does that sound familiar? You're going to have the rumor of wars, right? So we look to the end times, and we're going to see things happening. And that means the judgment is coming soon, right? But when God talks about that, that's not us. That rumor of wars, he says, you know, that's going to happen, but that's just the beginning of sorrows, right? So, you know, we look at that, and we're saying, oh, the time is short. It's coming soon. And that's exactly what God is telling them. You're going to hear a rumor, and then a year later, you're going to hear another rumor. So what happened was Belshazzar hears that the Medes and Persians are going to come against him. So he takes his army and he goes out to try to fight them in advance, and he gets whooped. So his army retreats, and they go into the city, feeling that they're safe there because they got the thick walls and it's so tall and all that stuff, right? So now the Medes and the Persians don't do anything right away because they know they can't destroy the wall. So they're trying to make a plan on how we're going to be able to do this. And that's when God decides he's going to bring a drought. And then Cyrus is able to say, oh, if the water gets low enough, we can divert the remaining water and then we can go under the wall. So it's a great thing that, you know, God controls, God brings to pass. So then that's the second rumor that now, you know, the Medes and the Persians are coming. So what happens is, well, I'll say there are two possibilities here. When Cyrus comes in and he takes the city, it's not like immediately there's the edict for the Jews to go back home, right? That doesn't come right away because, you know, Daniel brings the word to Cyrus and says, hey, you know, God predicted that you were going to beat them, and this is what he said, and you're going to let his people go and everything. And so that could be the other rumor, depending on how you look at it, that the people are going to now hear. But the problem is God is warning them that when you hear this, the time is coming, and you're going to want to get ready to get out of here. But we understand that when Cyrus says, you know, go back to Jerusalem, that only a small number of people went back. So they didn't heed God's warning. Now, that's not unusual, right? I mean, when the end times come and, you know, all the signs are there that this is happening and we're gone, but there are people that we've talked to who know what we've said to them is happening, and they see it happen, and now they begin to believe, but unfortunately they got to go through the tribulation. But, you know, that warning came to them, but they didn't heed it. And now they have to suffer. And that's what's going to happen to those Jews that stayed in Babylon, because they didn't listen to God. God said, when he says go, go. But they didn't go. They were afraid. And you know what the problem was? We talked about this on Sunday. They were happy in Babylon. Things were going well for them, and they planted their roots there. They said, hey, you know, we've been here 70 years. I built a home. I've got a life. I've got an occupation. I've had kids. Everything's going pretty good. And, you know, there's no way anybody's going to infiltrate this wall. Well, these are the same people who said that in Jerusalem, saying, we have this great wall, and it's going to protect us, and nobody can come and destroy it. And yet they did. So, you know, God told them, surrender and go to Babylon. And, you know, they did. Why would you not trust him now? Well, more than likely because it's not the same generation. It's 70 years later. So now they don't want to listen. Or most of them don't want to listen. And they have to suffer the consequences. So, all right. Verses 47 and 48. He says, therefore, behold, the days come that I will do judgment upon the graven images of Babylon, and her whole land shall be confounded, and all her slain shall fall in the midst of her. Then the heaven and the earth and all that is therein shall sing for Babylon, for the spoilers shall come upon her from the north, saith the Lord. Now, you can understand when Babylon, the city we're talking about, fell, there was no singing in heaven at the time. So this is not speaking directly of that time. It's speaking of that time in the future when spiritual Babylon ends up falling and all the nations of the earth weep because of the fact that she's been destroyed. And if you go to Revelation chapter 18, oh boy, verse 20, it says, rejoice over her, thou heaven, and ye holy apostles and prophets, for God hath avenged you on her. So we can see when Babylon falls, there's going to be rejoicing in heaven. And it's not because of, it's not because of the city of Babylon. It's because of what Babylon stands for. It's all the idolatry, the sinfulness, the iniquities that have been spread by her around the world. And when she gets destroyed, that's God saying, you know, my judgment is now complete. And all those people that had to suffer at the hands, you know, the prophets and the apostles, pretty much all but John were killed, rather horrible deaths. And many of the prophets were also slain. So what's happening is the Lord is saying, look, I've purged the creation of all that stuff. And then heaven and all the prophets and the apostles rejoice. It's really, I'm sure we're going to rejoice too, but we're not in the list. So I don't know. I'm sure we're going to rejoice too, but I don't know. It's a hard thing to think about because when that level of destruction occurs, it's hard to imagine that you're going to see it and then rejoice. There's got to be a level of some kind of sorrow that happens. Like when we talked about Jeremiah reading what was going to come and happen to the nation, and it caused him to have down in his bowels to be sorrowful, you know. I don't know. But when we're in heaven, maybe we're just not going to think that way anymore. I don't know. It's hard to say. But, okay, enough of that downer. 49 to 52, back in Jeremiah 51. It says, as Babylon hath caused the slain of Israel to fall, so at Babylon shall fall the slain of all the earth. Ye that have escaped the sword, go away, stand not still. Remember the Lord afar off, and let Jerusalem come into your mind. We are confounded because we have heard reproach. Shame hath covered our faces, for strangers are come into the sanctuaries of the Lord's house. Wherefore, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will do judgment upon her graven images, and through all her land the wounded shall groan. Now, again, I mean, there's a certain amount of application to the people of the city of Jerusalem who knew that, you know, the heathen have come in and gone into the temple and ransacked the temple and then tore the walls of the temple down and, you know, wanted the gold, wanted all the precious metal and jewels that were there. And, you know, that has to be something that brings sorrow to you when you know what all of that represented. It was God's house. So, you know, there's an application there. But the application still goes farther because it goes into the future. Because he's talking about how in verse 49, Babylon hath caused the slain of Israel to fall, so at Babylon shall fall the slain of all the earth. So this is speaking broad. This is not just Babylon. This is what Babylon has done in spreading her evil is now going to be judged all over the earth. So, you know, any that escape the sword are gonna die. So it's a broader thing. And in Revelation 18, I probably should have had you stay there. Verse 24. It says, and in her was found, and that's speaking of Babylon, found the blood of prophets and of saints and all that were slain upon the earth. So, okay. Well, that might have been a little different. So the Lord is saying, remember what happened. Remember this holy place, my place that I said I would come and dwell among the people, what they did to it. And because of that, when this judgment comes, we can see God is from, you know, spiritual Babylon, speaking of the judgment that's going to occur, that will be widespread. He's got to judge the whole world, and that's a judgment. I mean, only God can do that, right? The Lord of hosts. But he's got to purge sin, and the evil, and take it back from the evil one who now has the reins over the air and the earth. So he's going to buy it back and he's going to judge it and take it back. Now it's going to be his again. So it's getting to the point where, you know, everything that God had planned along his timeline is coming to bear. Then verses 53 to 57, it says, though Babylon should mount up to heaven, and though she should fortify the height of her strength, yet from me shall spoilers come unto her, saith the Lord. A sound of a cry cometh from Babylon, and great destruction from the land of the Chaldeans. Because the Lord hath spoiled Babylon and destroyed out of her the great voice, when her waves do roar like great waters, a noise of her voice is uttered. Because the spoiler has come upon her, even upon Babylon, and upon her mighty, and her mighty men are taken, every one of their bows is broken, for the Lord God of recompenses shall surely requite. And I will make drunk her princes and her wise men, her captains and her rulers and her mighty men, and they shall sleep a perpetual sleep and not wake, saith the King, whose name is the Lord of hosts. So again, you know, this is the judgment that comes against them as they're having their little party and everything, right? And he reiterates it. Now, he does that a lot. And I always say that when God repeats something, he wants us to remember it. And, you know, I'm sure there's a reason why that is so important. But we have to remember that, again, we're talking about that time, and we're talking about that time that is yet to come. Now, we talked about the fact that, you know, the wall was really wide, and it's a double wall. And the wall was really high. And you can find all kinds of accounts, but, you know, it's not like it stays the same height all over the place, because as the ground, you know, changes contour, the wall, you got to make the wall flat, right? So the wall is said to be 80 feet high in some spots. But what I found interesting is when I read about it, it said that they had dug 35 feet into the ground so that they actually started the wall 35 feet below the surface. Now, that can make sense because you could understand that someone could try to tunnel under your wall, right? But, you know, maybe because of the height, that's where the bedrock was. I don't know. I don't know that much about the area, so I'm not sure. But, you know, it's obviously better to build on the bedrock. And, you know, of course, you know, then it makes you think of the parable, right? Building on the rock and building on the sand. And but I don't know. But, you know, definitely they wouldn't want someone to just dig 10 feet under and come up on the other side and be able to infiltrate their city. So, and that's probably why they had a double wall too. So you'd have had to have gone really, really far underneath there. And this isn't Hogan's Heroes. So, okay. All right. And, you know, I love the fact that it says, you know, that God, he's the God of recompenses, and he shall surely requite. You know what that means? That he doesn't let anything go. He remembers it, and he's going to judge it. So, and he recompenses it. So we always talk about how, you know, his judgment is in line with our iniquity. So, you know, his judgment against Babylon is going to be in line with, I mean, the city of Babylon, how nasty they were to the people that they captured and overran, and spiritual Babylon, because she spread her evil all throughout the world, right? All right. So, 58. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the broad walls of Babylon shall be utterly broken, and her high gates shall be burned with fire. And the people shall labor in vain, and the folk in the fire, and they shall be weary. Now, this one was interesting because, you know, you can imagine if you've got 60 feet of walled city, and it's double walled, and it's wide, and it's high, and they say that there was nothing left standing, so nobody was able to rebuild. You're wondering, like, well, how do you do that, right? Well, it said Cyrus brought 200,000 soldiers to take the wall apart, and it took them a year to do that. And there were 100 gates in the 60 miles of wall, and they burned those. And that's why they have the fire that was burning, and there was no way that anybody was going to be able to put that out. So they would labor in vain to try to put the fire out, but it wasn't going to happen. That's a lot of gates, and that's a lot of wall. So I would think that you would have an awful lot of... Well, the thing that was interesting is they said he didn't just build the walls from brick, but he had the brick made ceramic so that it was even harder. You know how ceramic tile, it's really hard to cut it and crack it unless you drop your, cast iron pan on it or something. But, that's a lot of brick. I don't know. I don't know how you do that. But the man was amazing, I have to say. Nebuchadnezzar, he had an eye for, building. But unfortunately,
Yeah. From that, those days. Why take this whole city apart? There has to be a reason for it. God didn't want it.
Well, yeah. I mean, God said. Well, spiritual Babylon comes back, but the city doesn't come back. Right. So, I mean, there's a place called Babylon today, but it's...
There is?
Yeah. But it's... There's like a historical ruin there that, they call Babylon. And...
But the
wall is gone. Yeah. Everything over there is gone. So... I mean, what happened to the statue, right? Yeah. Nebuchadnezzar's statue? Yeah, it's possible they may have found it, yeah. But that's not standing. So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would assume that that's how they know that it was 60 miles and a double wall. But, there's nothing left. It's just rubble. So, but you can imagine, there are places probably in Italy too, right, where they made mosaics out of ceramic on the floor, and those have lasted forever. They're still there, and they look beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and we think we're so smart. I don't know. We don't build anything to last. 200-300 years, and it's taken over by Mother Nature, right? I shouldn't say that. Okay, 59-60, and this is where it begins to get interesting. So the word which Jeremiah the prophet commanded Seraiah, the son of Neriah, the son of Maaseiah, when he went with Zedekiah, the king of Judah, into Babylon in the fourth year of his reign. And this Seraiah was a quiet prince. So Jeremiah wrote in a book all the evil that should come upon Babylon, even all these words that are written against Babylon. So this is kind of interesting. This is why it's important that we understand everything we've been reading is prophetic. So it hadn't happened yet. So in the fourth year, if I get that right again, of Zedekiah's reign. Zedekiah reigned 11 years. So Jerusalem hadn't fallen for 7 more years. So the people hadn't even, all the people that remained hadn't gone into captivity. But this guy, Zedekiah, he's told by Jeremiah that when the people go into captivity, this last incursion, you're going to go with them, and you're going to take this book, and you're going to read it to all the people that are in captivity so that they know what God says. Now, what an amazing God, right? You could imagine that the people that are like, we said there were 3 incursions of Babylon into Judah, and they took more people each time. And then the last time, pretty much they took anybody that was left except for the really poor and destitute. And then he's saying, now you're going to go with them. And when you do, I want you to go to all the captives that are in Babylon and tell them God says he's going to now judge Babylon too. So you can imagine, that should kind of raise your spirits a little bit, right? So, you know, look what they've done to us. You know, look what they've done to our country. Look what they did to our temple. And then, you know, God says, but don't worry, I'm going to requite them for that. So, you know, you would be like, oh, I can't wait, right? But, you know, if they read Jeremiah, unfortunately, they're going to see, well, it's 70 years. So, you know, you could be here a little while. So that's why God said, go there and live peaceably amongst the people. So, you know, you're going to be there a long time. But when God says, come out of there, come out of there. So, you know, none of this should have been a surprise to them. And that's the bottom line. You know, God wants them to know that there's a time where he's going to bring them back. And, you know, look to that time, right? And it's the same thing with us, right? Where we know that Jesus is going to return and he's going to take the church home. So we look to that time. But in the interim, you know, God doesn't just say live peaceably here on this earth, but he's telling us you've got things that you can do here. And one of them is to build his church. So, you know, let people know the truth and then, or at least, yeah, let them know the truth. Whether they accept it is up to them. But, you know, it's an opportunity for us in this window that we have before the Lord returns. But we look to that day when it's coming. So we don't say, oh, Lord, you know, yeah, and I don't want to be nasty, but I've had people complain, I hope it doesn't come too soon because I want to get married. I hope it doesn't come too soon because I want to have children. And, you know, I want to see my grandchildren. And I'm like, you know, you're not going to complain about it. When the Lord comes back and takes you to heaven, you're going to be rejoicing that you're there. So don't complain about it right now. Man, I wouldn't want to be in that situation. So, you know, look to that day. It's a hope, right? An eternal hope. So the Lord is going to forewarn his people that this is going to happen. And then verses 61 to 64. It says, and Jeremiah said to Sariah, when thou comest to Babylon, well, all right, let me back up a second. Can you imagine Sariah? He's a quiet and he's a quiet prince. And Jeremiah says, God wants you to go into captivity. And then you got to preach this. So, you know, it's like, well, Jeremiah, what are you going to do? You know, but that wasn't what God called Jeremiah to do. But, you know, you got a feel for this guy, Sariah, right? You know, when a quiet man, you know, he's kind of like under the radar kind of guy, right? But now Jeremiah says, you're going to go in there and you're going to preach to them and tell them all the judgments that have come on Babylon. Now, I imagine that can't be a very pleasant thing if you've got, you know, the Babylonians around and you're telling them, hey, you're going to be conquered in the future. But, you know, that's just me. Okay. So Jeremiah in 61 says to Sariah, when thou comest to Babylon and shalt see and shalt read all these words, then shalt thou say, O Lord, thou hast spoken against this place to cut it off, that none shall remain in it, neither man nor beast, but it shall be desolate forever. And it shall be, when thou hast made an end of reading this book, that thou shalt bind a stone to it, and cast it into the midst of Euphrates. And thou shalt say, thus shall Babylon sink, and shall not rise from the evil that I will bring upon her, and they shall be weary. Thus far are the words of Jeremiah. So, you know, I mean, it's imagery, but it's very clear. So this book contains all the judgments that are going to happen against Babylon. Preach the entire book to the people, then put a stone on it and cast it into Euphrates. And just as it sinks, that's how Babylon is going to disappear. That's pretty symbolic. Now, yeah. Yeah. But this, but it's not the entire book of Jeremiah. This is the book of the judgments of Babylon. Yeah. I mean, that's what God says. So, you know, so Jeremiah wrote in a book all the evil that should come upon Babylon. So I'm assuming that this is separate from what he had Baruch writing. So, but poor Baruch, he probably had to write that one too. So, all right. So, and you know, he says, thus far are the words of Jeremiah. Now that kind of tells you something, right? Well, one, we still have one chapter to go. So you know that there's more. And then we know that there was the book of Lamentations that comes after that, which is also written by Jeremiah. But if you, last time that we're going to go to Revelation, and then we're going to close. Revelation 18 again, and verse 21. It says, and the mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and cast it into the sea, saying, thus with violence shall the great city Babylon be thrown down and shall be found no more at all. So we have the symbolism continues, right? You've got the book that sinks into the Euphrates, which talks about the city of Babylon that's going to no longer be. And then you've got spiritual Babylon in the future, with all the evils that she has done, where God says she's going to be overthrown and she'll be destroyed just like this millstone that's being cast into the sea. So, you know, it continues. And I love the way God does that. It's a, it's, well, it'd be impossible for me because, you know, I could write something 4 days ago and forget what I wrote. So, I don't know. All right. So we'll close in prayer.